Hello, Talal. How are you?
Good morning. How are you going?
Good morning. Good morning. I just thought I'll explain to give people a little bit of background to Talal. He's an experienced lawyer, banker, non-executive director. Did 10 years at PwC as a director and strategist. A little while at Babcock & Brown. And he's held leadership positions at Better Place Australia. He's the founder and managing director of Crescent Wealth, and notably has the Order of Australian Merit, and is also an honorary professional fellow at the Australian National University. So pretty impressive there, Talal.
Thank you very much. I think, Philemon, the voice is not so clear from my end, but if I heard you correctly, I thank you is in order.
I think, Talal, before we talk about Crescent Wealth, I think it might be an idea just to give people a little bit of background to yourself as well. I think you've got a real rags-to-riches story there. I think did your family come over from Lebanon, or were you born over here? Can you give us a bit of background to yourself there?
Yes, my family emigrated here under the government policies in 1977 after the civil war in Lebanon in 1975 commenced. So I was born in Lebanon, but I came here when I was 5 years old, and which I just gave away my age there. But I say that I was produced in Lebanon but assembled in Australia.
Right. And just having a look at this Order of Australian Merit, that sounds very impressive as well. How do you go about getting an Order of Australian Merit?
Well, you don't quite go about getting an Order of Australia, so to speak. It is a meritorious award given by an independent government body that seeks to, I guess, recognise work in the community that people do variously. Whether it's in the military or in civil society, my Order of Australia was granted on the basis of my work in business, education, health, and multiculturalism. I received it at a relatively young age, and I felt a bit humbled and a bit embarrassed in the sense that I received it at the age of 37. But I'm very proud of the fact that I did receive such an award for, duty to society.
And notably, you're also an honorary professional fellow at Australian National University. I had a look on their site. There's only two other people, and they look considerably older than yourself. Or is that just an old photograph of yourself?
Sorry, again, the sound is not so good. But if I heard you correctly, yes, my honorary professorship at ANU is more about my academic bent and my view about Australia's future in Asia, not Australia's future apart from Asia, and the work that I do at Crescent Wealth and other organisations. So I fundamentally believe that Australia should not be an accident of history and geography, but should certainly take into account and take advantage of the fact that we live in the biggest neighbourhood that's going to take over effectively over the next 100, 200 years, and we should not find ourselves on the sidelines.
Okay, so how can you tell us a bit about Crescent Wealth and how you got involved in founding the company?
Right, Crescent Wealth the idea of having a Islamically compliant fund or an ultra ethical fund has been around for many years. There's not one, at least two decades in fact, there's not one major bank, major accounting, law or management firm that you don't talk to that will say quite, rolling off the tongue that they've done a lot of work, they've researched the area, etc., etc. But it was a very big surprise to us that nobody had actually gone and set up the product or had actually gone to market. Everybody had been or wanted to be an advisor and was very interested in the area, but that's kind of about it, and spent a lot of money. researching the area and how good it was and how fast it was going overseas. So we decided that we would actually action what we saw as a gap in the market, and that is that gap is one, servicing to some extent the large and growing population in Australia of people of the Islamic faith, but two, and more importantly, creating an ultra-ethical long-term value product that has worked overseas and has attracted a lot of investment overseas for other countries to help, I guess, create the classic multiplier effect, jobs and work in this country, and put Australia on the radar of Islamic funds around the world. So basically, it's about telling Australia and the Australian story.
Talal, you have Islamic fund, which I assume is specifically looking to attract funds or investing in Islamic with an Islamic principle. What sort of industries? Can you give us an idea of who you might invest in, and how that would qualify?
Sure, that's a very good question. Can I just take one step back and just make it very, very clear that Crescent Wealth is not an Islamic or Muslim company. Crescent Wealth is a investment firm that uses Islamic principles that are about 1,500 years old to invest. We employ all kinds of people. In fact, the majority of our employees are not from Islamic faith. And we are about returns and a specific way or a choice of how to invest your money, where you care about where you invested and you aim to get a market return. That's number one. Number two, what does it actually mean when you say, okay, do you only invest in Islamic businesses? How do you judge it? Well, what we do is we've got basically two filters. We have a qualitative filter and a quantitative filter. And the qualitative filter has four or five things that we can't invest in. So if you're in gambling, alcohol, tobacco, armaments, pornography, or in financial services or banks or financial institutions, then we do not invest in you, just as a matter of principle. So the big four, Macquarie Bank, companies such as Ainsworth Company, Aristocrat, Star City Casino, etc., etc., we just don't invest in those stocks. But once you make it through the first qualitative filter, then there's the quantitative filter, which is basically a numbers filter. And that's simply based on conservative investment. So if you are BHP and you buy a mine and part of that mine has, hypothetically a casino and a pub, one sells beer, one sells gambling services, then we have a rule. It's called a materiality test. If more than 5% of the income for that year is from a prohibited activity or undesirable activity, i.e. alcohol or gambling, then we sell you down over a period of time. If less than 5% of that income, let's say 3%, is from that activity, then what we do is we cleanse the fund. We call it cleansing. We remove that 3%, and that goes to the Crescent Foundation, which then distributes that money to an Australian registered charity like the Smith Family, the Islamic Museum of Australia, Cancer New South Wales, etc. And so we make sure that we stick to our principles in terms of getting investment from appropriate investment, good investment, but at the same time being flexible as much as possible to make sure there is something to invest in. If you've got more than 30% debt, if that's one, then we don't invest in you. If you've got more than 70% receivable, i.e. you can't or won't collect your money. And the third one is if you've got more than 30% of your assets in liquid, in income, in cash, sitting in a bank somewhere, because that means you're a bit of a cash box. So that was a pretty long answer, but I'm hoping to give your listeners an idea of what we believe in and how we invest.
Well, actually, Talal, I did have one question for you just off the back of what you were saying there about alcohol and so on. I noticed, I think when we met a couple of weeks ago that you got Woolworths within your portfolio. Now I'm looking at Woolworths and I'm thinking, surely don't they own Dan Murphy's? So surely aren't they?
Yes,
getting,
indeed.
And so yes, how
they do.
So how do you account for that? How are you managing to invest in companies?
Well, we follow very closely. We select each stock and we follow very closely the investment, our investment in particular companies. And the way we deal with that is Woolies is a diversified, multi-pronged business these days, and it does own Dan Murphy. So the way we work it out is, does Dan Murphy constitute more than 5% of the income for that year of Woolies? And it's a materiality test. If it is more than 5%, then we will sell the Woolworths shares down. If it's less than 5%, then we'll cleanse out or remove that 2.5% of profit that came from Dan Murphy's or the Dan Murphy's business, and we will give that to charity in Australia.
Okay, so I'm just looking at this and thinking, you know, is this, a couple of things. One, is this limited just to Muslims to invest into? And secondly, you know, the principles behind this are all very good and so on, but how do these funds actually perform? Are you there, Talal?
Sorry, I missed that question.
Okay, so I was saying twofold. One, first thing was, is this limited then to people who are Muslims to invest into? And secondly, you know, it's very good having these principles behind your investments, but in terms of, you know, because you're limiting the investment scope, how do these funds actually perform relative to others in the market?
Great. Thank you. They're two very good questions. The first one, and again, let's be very, very clear, our target market is the wider Australian population, not the Muslim community of Australia only. Whilst it makes sense for the Muslim community to be interested as a low-hanging fruit, our absolute target market is a broader Australian community. Why? Because we're the only fund, especially the Australian Equities Fund, that diversifies away against financials. There's no other Australian Equities Fund in the country that doesn't have at least 25% if not more, of their funds in financials. That's the first matter. The second one is evidence around the world is that whenever so-called Islamic funds set up, the investors are overwhelmingly from the broader community. Let me give you some evidence. In America, Fortuna Capital, which has $4 billion of funds under management, which is not a big number for Australia, but remember, in America, there's no superannuation. This is voluntary income. 90% of that comes from the broader American community, only 10% from the American Muslim community. In Malaysia, a similar story, 60% of all investment in Islamic products are from the broader Malaysian community. And indeed, in Australia already, and we've literally just opened up our doors, but we haven't advertised until now, the major investor, as we test our products and, you know, basically make sure everything is working as we wish it to, is Ayan Hewitt, certainly not an Islamic company by any stretch of the imagination, but one that cares deeply about where money is invested.
Talal, I've just got one quick question, because you talked about this is about ethics, and I see there's a broad underlining ethical sort of platform that you're working from. If you were looking at a mining stock and they were to mine uranium, would you see the uranium component as unethical or immoral, or would that exclude it from the Islamic or the...
if they owned a ring, did you say?
No, if they... Uranium that is used in nuclear technology. Yes. Do you see that as unethical?
It's not an issue for us. We are not a classic ethical fund. We are an ultra-ethical fund, and you don't need to look that up because that's a word I'm trying to put into the lexicon. Ethical funds traditionally have a particular bent with respect to mining, green issues, gender issues, some kind of issue. And, you know, we support them in the sense that I think from an ethical point of view, everybody should have a choice of where their money is invested. Our rules are about don't take into account those specific issues. They're much more about value investing over the long term, and they're 3 to 5 or 3 to 35 year investments in value stocks on a conservative level that cares about banking, pornography, and issues I went through before. But in terms of the political issue, really, of and the nationhood issue of uranium and its the danger of it, etc., we actually don't take that into account, only because I guess there are many, many other issues you could take into account. I mean, you know, selling chemicals to people is also pretty dangerous. How do we know? How can we track that, etc.?
Okay, and actually, I picked up some stats beforehand as well. I went and looked up Sedona Capital, which is interesting to have a look at. Over the last 10 years, they've averaged a return of, this is over in the US, by the way, they've averaged a return of about 11.5% a year compounded, whereas the S&P 500, if you took all the dividends and reinvested that, that would have returned about 7.5% a year over the last 10 years. So quite a significant difference. Do you think there's a specific reason, Talal, why that fund has performed so well? Is it purely investing on Islamic
principles? I presume you're referring to the Manan mutual funds?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yes. The Manan mutual fund have outperformed the S&P 500 over from, you know, about 2003, 2004 to date. I think because they are using the principles that we're adopting in Australia. The international IOFI, Islamic standards, basically, of investment, which have become the default standard. The rules that I was talking about before about how we invest are the rules that Amana uses. And we believe over the long term, in a safe environment, in terms of we don't take risks, or we don't take leverage risk, etc., we are looking to get similar returns. And in any event, Amana are going to be the ones that are our international fund managers, in effect, and we hope to get a similar return for our investors in Australia. The reason is because of the principles and the conservatism and the value of investment. And we just, when you don't invest in debt or leverage, then, as we know, when you borrow money for a business activity, it either increases dramatically your profit or decreases or increases dramatically your loss if the business ends up losing, because you only lose your principal, you lose the money you borrowed. So if I put it in those simple terms, then investing in deleverage is what we do and what Amana has done. And it has proven up at least from 2003, that this kind of investment not only is good for humanity, it works.
Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
And what I found particularly good of when I looked at the Islamic funds over in the US is how they performed during the GFC, because of the lack of leverage, they tended to perform better during the falls that we saw in the GFC there. So anyway, Talal, thanks for your time. Is there anything you'd like to mention before you go? Any last words before you go today?
Oh, there'll be just one thing. Thank you very much for this, Norman. Final thing is, I guess, I would like your listeners to have a look. Have a look at our website at crescentwealth.com.au and see whether that kind of investing is something they'd be interested in. And to recall that Islamic investing, don't be frightened off by that. It's all about, it's just a principled way of investing that's ethical and takes into account moral standards, but at the same time seeks to get a market return. And it's not an excuse for not doing well, and we're going to be doing our very best to do that. And we look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Talal.
Thank you, Talal.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All the best to you. That was Talal Yassin from the Crescent Wealth, and with his Islamic funds and other funds with kind of a moral bent. We'll play a track from Sting now, If I Ever Lose My Faith in You.